Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking,
I work every day with individuals and companies trying to figure out how can they grow their money, how can they protect their money. But I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing is how are you making a positive impact? Are you doing something with your money that will leave this world in a better place? That's the beauty of money. You need to have that positive side.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella's story out of nowhere.
Did you know that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
Capital Hacking is
every. Welcome back to Capital Hacking. Gosh, isn't it great to hear Mr. Robert Kiyosaki endorse what we're doing, Eric?
He's the best. He's a living legend.
So we just, you know, of course, all of us were enjoying the beginning of the beautiful Capital Hacking show. And this is Josh McCown, your illustrious. No, I'm the humble servant of all of the listeners. I can't be illustrious because Eric is illustrious. The illustrious Eric Cabral is here with us live.
Yes.
You're live, aren't you?
We're all live.
By the way, the first episode, he says, let's podcast live. And I'm thinking, you know, back then it was before the heavy duty live streaming. And I was super against the word live when recording. You're recording live.
Everything's live at some point, isn't it?
Everything was live at some point. And that brings us to why we want to talk about inspired money today. Notice Andy Wang, who's about to come on the air. Notice that transition. Okay, that was world-class podcasting transition. Eric has been teaching me. He sends me cue cards through the Zoom. Andy Wang is on the show today. So he is the managing partner of something called Runnymede Capital. But we also love that Andy is a podcast professional. And I don't just mean a little slacker here, folks. Inspired Money is Andy's show. It is a top 100, okay, show. Actually, it's a top 10 by Forbes as a personal finance podcast. That makes it incredible. It's almost 3 years old, 140 episodes. By the way, we're hot on your trail, Andy. And many people, and you've been on Reuters, is that what it's called? Yeah, Reuters. Yeah, I'm saying that right, right? Barron's, Forbes, everything. And of course it's Reuters. What the hell? No, it's Reuters. What the hell, Eric? Throwing me off that with the cue card, with the phonetic. Anyway, so Andy, who snuck in there a second ago, what else we want to talk about today, and I'm teasing it out here at the beginning, is Runnymede Capital, which is a fee-based registered investment advisor. I love the distinction there about it being fee-based only. You'll have to explain all that to us. But before that, welcome to the show, Andy.
Welcome, Andy.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Eric. So great to be here.
Yeah. Awesome. And by the way, I want to make sure I ask you a question. Have you been on other podcasts before?
I have, from time to time.
Has anyone done an intro like that before?
No, never. Indirectly, I can say that Robert Kiyosaki introduced me, right?
That's actually a great point. He did. He said, what you're listening to today is the most important thing.
So that is a first. That is a world exclusive.
It is. And the reason I make a joke about that, Andy, is because I really am impressed with your bio. And we wanted to make sure everybody got a little bit of that out of it. Plus, it's always fun to mispronounce Reuters. So I wanted to make sure all that got done before we get into any interesting financial conversation. Let's get all that hilarity over with, damn it. Eric always says, keep the hilarity to the first minute or else I'm going to leave the damn podcast. So, Andy, I hope you're bringing it hot. Come in hot, baby. Why the heck did you create Inspired Money? Let's start right at the top.
Well, thank you for all that fantastic marketing with the bio introduction. I appreciate that.
By the way, we make no money from Inspired Capital or Inspired Money because we're here hacking it, baby. If you threw us any money, I'd hack the hell out of it.
So thank you for your kind words. And I guess number of episodes, you guys are catching up to me. I'm sure you will surpass me soon. It won't take that long. But yeah, Inspired Money is just, it's half passion project. Part, I tried to tie it to my work at Runnymede Capital Management. So I made sure that it had that money component so that I can rationalize doing some interviews during my 9-to-5.
I love Eric. Talk about inside baseball. It's not like he gave the most precise answer to that question ever. Is it? Is that a fair statement, Eric?
Probably. Very fair.
Well, my whole feeling is that most of us, when it comes to money, all too often it ends up on the back burner because life gets in the way, right? Like, I have to take my daughter to her soccer practice, or I have to take my son to his music lesson. And are people spending the time to actually look at their 401k? I think the data says that people are not addressing their finances as often as they can or as they should. So Inspired Money is loosely about money. It's about inspiring stories. It's about trying to frame positive money stories by talking to all kinds of different guests in hopes of inspiring somebody to believe that money is not evil and that they should address their finances.
You know, this is a time of uncertainty and people are asking questions. They ask us questions. So what are some of the things on top of your mind during these times?
Well, we've never lived through a pandemic before. What blows my mind is that it's a global situation that everybody, like every human, has this shared experience. I've talked to a very close friend in Italy early on to figure out what's happening there before it really heated up in the United States. I have a friend in Hawaii who I talked to. And then I was speaking to a guy in the Philippines. It was like middle of the night. It was 11 p.m. here. It was morning for him. And to me, it made no difference. Like it was like talking to my next door neighbor. Everybody was experiencing the same thing. Just staying at home. They were with their families. And we're seeing things that we've never seen before. I mean, Eric, you talk about uncertainty. I've never in my career had such lack of visibility into like what might happen in the economy in the next 6 to 12 months. Already we've seen J. Crew has declared bankruptcy. I think that there are other retailers that could follow suit. I'm concerned about small businesses, our favorite neighborhood pizzeria or restaurant, the yoga studio that people go to and for exercise and to clear their mind. A lot of those businesses are susceptible because they have to pay rent and they've been forced to be closed. So it's been a very crazy time. On the flip side of this, you have stimulus like the federal government has never done before. The Federal Reserve Bank has gone as far as even buying corporate bonds and municipal bonds. So they're buying some risk assets to support those markets and make sure that they're functioning correctly. So it is like unforeseen times. And when you have that much stimulus, I think that that is why you've seen the financial markets be very resilient. And, despite like skyrocketing jobless claims, you have the forecast for GDP for the next quarter is expected to look terrible, but the markets have held up. So a lot of money in the system.
Is there anything in particular that you're bullish or bearish on? What is Andy Wang looking to get into or pulling back on?
Well, I think that when it comes to investment philosophy, investment discipline, that's pretty clear for us. We tend to like companies that have very consistent earnings growth, hopefully revenue growth. These are companies from different sectors and industries, because our feeling is that earnings matter. If you can invest in a company that's making money quarter after quarter, year after year, the stock price should correlate to that earnings growth. And when we can understand what is the forecast, what is the growth plan for that company over the next year, 3 years, 5 years, we leave it to the company management to worry about, can they achieve their growth plan? And we, as the advisor, we're just trying to figure out what are we willing to pay for that earnings stream? Is it expensive? Is it cheap? And then that way we can do some risk assessment. You know, how is the value?
Are there any sectors or industries that you're, or companies in particular, that you've sort of been impressed with their moves over the past couple of months?
Well, I think, again, it comes back to this very unusual period, because if you look at oil, you look at energy, you look at financial services like banks, those stocks have not been doing well. And you look at some of those individual stocks and you say, all right, this looks like a bear market. But then you look at technology, and we're on a Zoom call right now. Zoom stock has been doing very well. Amazon has been doing well. There are areas of our economy that continue to do well, even though, like, the Main Street economy is really not functioning properly. And pharmaceuticals, drugs have been doing pretty well. People need their medicine, no matter what's happening in the economy. So there are areas that are doing fine. But yes, I think this will take a while to really normalize. It's like, what will happen to airlines, even though there's government support there? But how soon will we start traveling? How soon will we go into a hotel? How soon will we go to a big conference? Those are the things that I expect take a little time.
Let me ask you about that. So this show is nice. It's a nice change of pace, Andy, because before the show, I asked you if your RIA, your registered investment advisory firm, invests in alternative assets like real estate, which is ironic that real estate's an alternative investment, but it is, like what we do with private placements. And you said, no, not your firm. Your industry can. RIAs are allowed to, but your firm doesn't. So this will be a much more of a Wall Street public markets discussion. And I thought it was great how you broke down where we are today, which is early May, looking at the markets. By the way, I was not aware that the Fed has started buying bonds directly from corporations. Huh? Is that does that change the metric in any way? Is that a big deal to you in the public markets, or is that something that's happened before?
Well, I think it started because early on in the stay-at-home, shelter-in-place, when the market started reacting very severely, really dropping precipitously, the bond market, there were dislocations happening due to liquidity. I think that investors were just selling everything because they needed cash. And it was a little bit unusual in that usually in times of crisis, there is a flight to safety, right? There's usually a flight to government bonds, to dividend-paying stocks, to whatever investors feel are safer. But, you know, in that short drop that we saw this year in 2020, it just seemed like everything was going down because people needed cash, and they were just selling whatever they had. And the result was that the bond market started functioning strangely as far as pricing. And I think that the Fed became concerned about that because they don't want a situation where things are just not operating properly in the markets, because then strange things can happen. It can cause problems for banks and the different institutions who are facilitating those orders. So that's why they wanted to start buying. I mean, it's weird because I think the takeaway is that people kind of feel like, well, if the Fed is going to kind of backstop the bond market, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, they're removing some of the risk there. So in turn, we've seen a lot of the bond pricing return or rebound pretty sharply. I mean, if you look at a chart, it's like muni bonds went down drastically and they've come back a lot. And part of that is because there's government intervention.
That's actually a really interesting point. And Eric and I talk about that. Plus there's money. Now, is the money from a stimulus, we all know it's artificial money being created by the sale of, you know, securities, or perhaps the buyback. Basically, it's debt that we're going into that is creating new dollars. So that infusion of dollars into the economy, I have the assumption that it actually artificially creates an asset appreciation because of inflation, really. However, when the economy is working great and money is being created by fractional banking, where you put $100 in, the bank holds 10 and loans out 90. There's always money and currency being created, at least virtually, right? So is a stimulus bigger than what would have happened in the two-month period? Like, would the economy have expanded by $2 trillion? Or would the economy have normally expanded by $200 million? And this is 10 banks. What is, like, normal compared to the stimulus?
Well, we've seen all kinds of different government, like, approaches, even in the last 3 years, or if you go back to the last 10 years, if you started with the financial crisis, it was really back in 2008, 2009, that we saw the Federal Reserve, we saw the European Central Bank, we also saw the Bank of Japan. They were all doing quantitative easing, meaning that they had asset purchase programs with the idea of trying to stimulate economies and bring down interest rates very low. And when they do that, money inevitably ends up in riskier assets because investors get zero interest rate. In order to get a return, they have to own riskier assets. So they're buying dividend-paying stocks instead of bonds. And we've seen that in the last 10 years, we've been through periods of QE and then raising interest rates and then kind of QE happening again. In the last 2 months, it's been just massive. I mean, the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve is much higher than it's ever been. So they've, in my opinion, they've outdone themselves. I mean, this is not normal. The rate of their purchasing is on a massive scale. And that, I think, supports financial markets. And the longer you do it, you can also have bubble surfacing. Like, that money is going to end up somewhere. So the question is, does it just keep pushing tech up? Because high tech has held up very well. Some of the tech stocks you look at, it looks like almost nothing happened. I mean, there was a fall, but then a sharp rebound. Very little happened. And that's despite very negative economic news.
Would you mind maybe reference one or two? This is a really different type of show for us. I'd love to learn a little bit from you.
Well, so
I would assume Amazon's actually on the beneficiary side of this.
Amazon's a beneficiary. I mean, at least Amazon, it can be explained that the fundamentals of their business, they're a beneficiary.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for a long time, I have more Amazon packages coming to my house than is probably necessary. And actually, because of that, my brother and I work with my brother at Runnymede. And just about a year and a half ago, he said, you know what? We have too many Amazon packages coming to our house all the time and office. So we really need to be more cognizant and make an effort to support local business because we do not want our main street, our downtown, to have vacant businesses, vacant buildings, because we're not supporting small business. So we actually created something called Buy Local NJ here in New Jersey. And we go around interviewing small business owners to talk about their business. You know, they're very proud that they've been in business for, I mean, we've talked to companies that have just started. We talked to one business that's been around for 97 years or something.
Wow.
It's like a third generation moving company. So yeah, just trying
what format do you have that? Is that a video on YouTube? How do you do that show?
It's a 5 to 10 minute video on YouTube.
Wow, that's wonderful.
YouTube, Facebook, Instagram.
I like that. That's a great effort.
And I mean, the like political environment that we're in is so divisive.
Sadly.
It's nice to just do support small business. I think that's a unifying message. I've yet to find somebody who's against supporting local business.
I have a comment on that, and this could get political or not, and I'd rather it not, honestly. But so if you go to a local Target, which, you know, you could loosely call local, right? That's a large corporation across the nation. I was under the assumption that only the essentials would be available to us, meaning the groceries and pharmaceutical or RX, the pharmacy. So when you go through a Target, it's all open. clothing, electronics, whatever business supplies is all available to everyone. Now, what does that do? And I need both of you to sort of weigh in on this. The local businesses that have office supplies or have or the local whatever it is that they provide at Target or the larger big box, small businesses can't compete because they're not open.
What an interesting problem.
It is. I don't get it. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys have any comments to that, but it's just an observation that I had that, although it's convenient for us that these big boxes are open, but I'm with you. Small businesses, I'm a small business. More than happy to make appearance on your show. Josh is also considered, I guess, a small business, local business with
absolutely,
the winery.
Yeah, our resorts are beautiful local landmarks.
And we're all getting hit. And unfortunately, people, especially the foot traffic type of businesses, I feel terrible what they're having to do and shutter their doors or abide by what's happening.
I mean, by our measure, Target does not count. I mean, Target does create a lot of local jobs, but we don't view it as a local business. And you bring up a good point because some of those big box stores, they are open. Even Costco, right? Costco has been an important supplier for all kinds of things, especially toilet paper in this time. But yeah, I think the small businesses, the definition of what is essential has been kind of a gray area. I mean, I know that there are, Asian restaurants or Asian markets, and they're business owners who are working very hard. They're industrious. They do not want to close. So I think a lot of the time it's not totally clear because things are moving so quickly. But I think the good news is that we have seen small businesses, they've been very adaptable. And you see restaurants adapting very quickly. For example, there's a Thai restaurant nearby, and they have delivery, but they also have contactless pickup. So you pull up to the front of the store. They have some cones there. They have some signs that say, do not get out of your car. And you put your order through either calling by phone or putting it in online. So you pay by credit card. It's prepaid. You just show up. They ask you, did you call or did you order online? And then they just bring it out to you. You roll down your window. They put it in your car. You say thank you and you're off. So businesses have been adapting.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hello, this is Josh McCallan, CEO of Viva May Hospitality and the beautiful Renault Resort Winery. I have to tell you, the secret's out, and the secret is On Air Brands. On Air Brands, creative agency, which specializes in launching podcasts, transforming live events into live streaming events, and social media marketing soup to nuts. On Air Brands has changed the game. There'll never be a day from here forward when you and I and our companies don't need to be on the air. Every brand needs to be on the air, but so few know that. So it's great to work with a group that are ahead of the curve and to find a company that has been built on the core foundation of the future of marketing. If you're ready to broadcast your brand like they've done for my brands, take the next step and make a change that can transform your business. Reach out to On Air Brands today. That's onairbrands.com. Yes, onairbrands.com.
Hey, this is Mark Asquith from Rebel Base Media, and you are listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric.
This is great conversation. I want to make sure we, maybe what we could do here, which would be very helpful for the audience, is let's break down an RIA, a registered investment advisory firm. How does it distinguish that from what is called a financial advisor? Would you mind, let's break this down so we can have a nice clarity for some of us who have, you know, I blend the two together. Is there a difference?
Absolutely. We're covering we're going all over the place, but I'm happy to talk about this topic. It's one that I enjoy talking about, and I feel like most of the time people don't care. So I am going to address the listener, and thank you for humoring me in listening to this segment. I think it's extremely important that investors, that the consumer understands the difference between a fee-only advisor, a fee-based advisor, and a broker. The trouble is that the entire industry can call him or herself a financial advisor. So there's tremendous confusion. Nobody knows the difference between an insurance salesperson, between somebody who, because you don't really need to take much of a test. So almost anybody can say, I'm a financial advisor. And there's no indication of, did you go to college? Did you not go to college? Did you work at a firm and work with clients, or did you not? It's very, very difficult to tell. So the important thing to know is that fee only means fee only. That means that I cannot collect a commission. I'm never paid a commission from a mutual fund company or from any company issuing a product. And I think the important thing to know for the consumer there is that I'm sitting on the same side of the table as him or her all the time. My job, by charging a fee, is that my incentive, the way that I get paid, is to either grow their account or to protect their money. And there are fewer potential conflicts of interest because as I'm evaluating different investment choices for them, I'm not drawn to one because product A pays me a higher commission than product B. And by law, it's called a fiduciary. By law, I'm a fiduciary. I must put the client's interest before mine. And if there are any conflicts of interest, if there's any reason that the, you know, a decision that I'm making or a recommendation or suggestion that I'm making benefits me, I'm required by law to let the client know. And there are very few of those. When that comes up, one, for example, is an IRA rollover. If someone has a 401k that they no longer work at that job and they're asking me, should I roll this over into an IRA that you can manage? That's a little bit of a conflict of interest because if they roll it over, I can charge and manage that for them versus if they keep it in the plan, which oftentimes they can do indefinitely, unless it's a very small account. Sometimes they're forced to remove it. But say you've worked at Amazon, you have a great plan that has very low cost, you might be better off just leaving it in there. So when I'm recommending roll it over into an IRA for me to manage, I have to disclose to them that's a potential conflict because if you leave it in your 401k, I can advise you, but I'm not going to be charging a fee on those assets. So that's one thing, right? The other gray area is that broker dealers are paid a commission, or sometimes they're also charging a fee, just like a fee-based or fee-only advisor. So it gets very confusing. The key is that I think all consumers should ask potential financial advisors that they work with, or even the financial advisor that they are working with, how do you get paid? Are you fee-only? Is it commission? And then fee-based is also confusing because fee-based sounds like fee-only, but fee-based is a hybrid. Fee-based advisors can make a commission, but can also charge a fee. So sometimes it's like a lamb in sheep's clothing because a fee-based advisor will say, I'm a fiduciary, but then very quietly, they don't tell you that they put on their broker hat and they're collecting a commission. That gets a little dicey.
That was an excellent explanation because I love it. So I'm going to summarize what I heard you say. I'm going to do my David Green right now, Eric. Fee, based versus fee only versus financial advisor. All of them can be called financial advisor. Financial advisor, you don't, that has no distinction of where their money comes from. Fee based actually is a wolf in a fox, a wolf in sheep's clothing. And because they could get both, they could be double dipping that legally by the name. They're not just saying they're not. And then fee only is fee only. Now, I think I did a good David Green there, but not, maybe not. So when it cuts down to fee only, it sounds so attractive to me, us, because we're sitting here going, oh, I get it. Our values are aligned. That sounds wonderful. But it also sounds expensive. So is it expensive to work with a fee-only person up front? Is there a fee? How do you charge a fee, and what's a normal fee?
I think the industry average is charging a fee of about 1%.
Of whatever's invested.
And it depends on the account side. You know, sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower, but on average, it's about 1%. I mean, Tony Robbins wrote much of his last book about this because he felt like people should know.
I didn't know that. Tell us about that. Summer, would you mind giving us? Tony's pretty impressive that he has a range, man. He's talking about financial advisories right now.
He did, because he became like the, I can't remember what his title was, but he became associated with a fee-only financial advisory company. And so he was trying to spread this message. And I mean, the difference is that financial advisors, there are hundreds of thousands of financial advisors in the United States. There are around 10,000 that are fee-based. And then if you call that down to fee-only, I think there are around 5,000. So it's a small percentage to the whole, which is why I think when I talk about fiduciary, most people don't care. But I think they should.
Well, I do, because it sounds very fiduciary to me, correct me if my understanding is wrong, is that our interests are aligned and that you have some responsibility for advice you give me.
That a fiduciary must put your interest first, must put the client's interest first, and whenever there's a conflict of interest, that has to be disclosed. If I were a broker dealer, that's on the other side, I don't have to disclose some of those things, and I'm not held to the same fiduciary standard because there's a different regulatory body. This gets very technical, but broker dealers are regulated by FINRA, not the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. FINRA does not require advisors to be fiduciaries. There's a suitability standard. In a nutshell, if I were advising you, should you pick mutual fund A or mutual fund B? Mutual fund A pays me more. Performance-wise, they're very similar. Suitability says that I can still recommend fund A, which pays me more. Doesn't benefit you, but it's suitable, quote unquote. So I'm allowed to do that. Whereas a fiduciary would not be able to do that.
Even if they were equal, but a fiduciary, if they disclosed it, could?
A fiduciary wouldn't be recommending either of those products because I'm not able to collect a commission. So odds are I'd be looking at a commission-free product for you. So I think that's a benefit to you, and your fees that you're paying are more transparent.
And by the way, here's a commercial for Andy, who seems to be a fantastic choice to investigate. The reason, remember back to a minute ago when he said, if you have the best 401k at Amazon, he'll disclose to you that you may want to keep it there, might do better for you. Here's one thing he did not suggest, but I'm going to suggest on his behalf. If you roll it over to someone like Andy or Andy himself and choose the Roth IRA conversion, now you will have to pay tax right now, but you might as well decide for yourself that that's the right choice for you, but you might as well, for many of us, take the tax on the seeds right now, the investment original, hand it over into an IRA, even if it's not quite as good as the 401k, because now you'll have tax-free growth. So that might be one pitch. If I did an okay job, you could pitch that as a totally accurate statement, right, Andy?
That is true. A lot of 401ks these days also have a Roth component, so you have to take that into consideration too. Odds are Amazon gives you a choice between a Roth 401k or just a regular pre-tax. But yes, a lot of the 401k plans these days give you that option. And it's similar. It's making a decision. Are you paying the tax now, or are you paying the tax later? And there's actually one benefit. A Roth IRA has phase outs depending on income. In a 401k, that's not the case.
Okay, that I'm confused by, but I'll let you clarify. But let me ask you another confusing thing. Say you have $100,000 in your 401k at Mr. Amazon, and you didn't choose a Roth at the beginning, so now it's all pre-tax dollars, right? Theoretically. They can roll over all $100,000 into a Roth IRA, correct?
No, you can do that, but it's going to depend on your income level because of the phase outs. If you make too much money, you may not be able to even have a Roth IRA because it has income phase outs.
Well, it's been an eye opener, huh, Eric?
Let's talk about what you're doing in the podcast industry. And Andy's been in the how many years now have you been doing podcasting?
I'm approaching three. Yeah.
Okay. So you've been doing it for a long time. What inspired you to say like, you know what, I'm just going to start another show? Because I mean, I know it's a video format. I know you're going to service the local businesses. What I like about you and love about you is you take more on. You know, you're also a co-founder to the Asian American Podcasters. So you've got a lot of irons in the fire. Tell us what inspired and pushed you to press play on the Buy Local New Jersey show.
Oh gosh, I'm laughing because I have yet to even answer your original question that you started the show off of. But Buy Local NJ, I think that when my brother asked me over lunch, do I think that I'm purchasing from Amazon way too often? And what should we do to help small businesses? That resonated because we're small business owners ourselves. And to work with other small businesses, it is so much fun. I mean, just for us to go around town, it becomes... Having a show is just such a great platform. We were all just laughing that you can get free advice, which is one of the benefits. You get access to people that you would not otherwise be able to speak to. And when I have a local focus for the Buy Local NJ show, these are like my neighbors. These are people that I'm driving through town. I didn't even know that there was a store called Just Jersey that I probably drove by 1,000 times and I didn't even know it was there. So I'm discovering retail shops that I didn't know about. My kids go to school with some of the children of these business owners. So you talk about a way to network, meet your neighbors, all the while trying to help your community. I mean, it's a win-win. I mean, it's fun. Why not do it?
You've highlighted something there that I think, you know, even you know, for myself and the audiences, the audience as well, I hope that especially with as business owners that have a product or a service that has sort of a national or global reach, we often lose sight of the micro. We're always on that macro level, looking high above and saying, how can I reach out to this person or that brand or this company? It's not necessarily a local business. And it's nice to be able to do exactly what you said and go at the micro and realize that, you know, there's another ecosystem going on while you're building a larger brand that's also beneficial for all parties to sort of get involved. So thanks for highlighting that because it's reminding me that I need to do that as well. I know when I started a few years ago, I was very much saturated and involved in the community and less as the company started to grow. So it's a reminder for me and hopefully for people that are listening to pay attention, especially during these days, to help the local businesses.
Well, since this show is called Capital Hacking, I think that the hack here is that for every dollar you spend locally, something like 70 cents stays within the community. And that doesn't happen when I'm buying groceries at Target or I order online at Amazon. When I'm buying something from a local business owner in my town, that money tends to recirculate within the local economy because that local business creates jobs. The people go on their lunch break and they go to the sandwich shop across the street. And a lot of these small businesses are cognizant of the need to support other small business owners. So a lot of the restaurants are buying from local sources. They're sourcing organic food from nearby farms. So that's where you're getting leverage, right? Your capital is having a bigger impact than your single purchase.
We often pick convenience over sort of local and helping the community, you know, especially with Amazon. Just get easier and easier just to pick up your phone and press buy as opposed to making a phone call, taking a trip and meeting people.
I try to be realistic about it because I don't think it can be all or nothing. Like, I still need convenience. I'm still going to buy something off of Amazon. But when one of my children need to buy a birthday gift because they have a birthday party this weekend, post-COVID, right now, that's all on hold. But post-COVID, you know, there's a nearby toy store, tons of toys. They're great. Great service. Not everything is going to be the same price as Amazon, but certain things don't cost that much more. Like Legos, for example. My wife is on top of all this stuff. She's like, I know what I can go over there and buy. I'm paying pretty much the same price. The guys who work there help me pick out what I need. There's free gift wrapping. During COVID-19, you can call them and order something. And again, they bring it out to your car and it's great. I mean, high level of service. It's a family-owned business. And, you know, I think that there's room for both.
You know, it's been an absolute pleasure. I love the positive nature about local, buying local and supporting those hardworking families near us. Andy, what's the best way our listeners can reach out to you and follow up with you based on some of the things you've been going over?
Well, I will give them two websites that pretty much go to the same place. They can either go to runnymede.com, that's RUNNYMEDE.com, or it's probably easier to spell. You go to inspiredmoney.fm, and that also points to Runnymede's website, but to the podcast side. And there, again, it's all about positive money stories and trying to make an impact, positive impact on this world using your money, because we didn't really get into that. But I think that that's the most important thing. I mean, I work every day with individuals and companies trying to figure out how can they grow their money? How can they protect their money? But I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing is how are you making a positive impact? Are you doing something with your money that will leave this world in a better place? And I think that that's the beauty of money, because without that, you're going to be miserable. You need to have that positive side.
I love how you ended that. That is such a powerful message. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I thought you were going to end on a little bit of music. I know there's a ukulele around there somewhere. Yeah, take us out on a nice song that we can. I'm teaching my daughter the ukulele. She's loving it. She's about to be 6 years old, and what better, you know, like Hawaiian music or things that everything translates so well to the ukulele.
That is awesome. Yes. My 7-year-old is playing the ukulele and I'm still trying to teach her more than one chord. She plays songs, but she just plays one chord repeatedly and changes the lyrics.
Yeah. We got to someday have you back on, or when we do another event, have you on stage, because Josh has not had the privilege of hearing your beautiful voice, and you're a super talented guy, man. So
the highlight for me was one time performing for Christy Brinkley and her family.
Oh,
that's,
wow.
Get out of here.
That's my claim to fame.
Where were you?
That was out in the Hamptons. I was invited out to her hometown out there. She was dedicating a tree to her mother and father who had passed away. And her stepdad, I think, split his time between Beverly Hills and Hawaii. So she grew up going to Hawaii and spending a lot of time there. So dedicating this tree to her mom and her stepdad, she wanted Hawaiian music. So I went out, played music. And then Christy Brinkley is actually one of the nicest celebrities I've ever met. I haven't met that many celebrities, but she invited me to dinner with her family afterwards. So that was quite the experience.
Very cool. All right, brother. We appreciate you, man. And thanks
for
being part of the tribe and the community here.
Thank you, guys. I'm a fan of the show. So really appreciate you having me on.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary V, he's my boy.
But Gary V also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life. And thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week. And we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to. And we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility. Woo!